Now, once again, here's Mark.
Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 4 o'clock. No, 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. It's Saturday morning. I should know that. But then again, you wouldn't believe what my morning's been like already. You wake up to feed the horses, and the gate's been left open, and you're in your boxer shorts, and you got to run around the pasture gathering up the horses, not thinking that anyone's walking in the meadow that adjoins your pasture. Nevertheless, that was the beginning, but everything's under control, and we have open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I've got two callers I'm going to get to you in just a minute, but Action Auto Repair has been around for a very long time. They're up at I-17 in Deer Valley, and I've known Tom, and he's been in business since 1983. Folks, that's a big deal, and here's why. There's a lot of big shops that have recently sold their businesses to conglomerates, and you'll notice that the name of your shop may have changed names. The big deal about that is that it's no secret. Just get on the internet. The prices are skyrocketing at certain shops, which for those of us still in the industry, that's kind of cool because they're pricing themselves out of the market, and it won't be long with social media that that happens. But you're not going to have that problem with Action Auto Repair. He hasn't sold his shop. He's not been absorbed into a giant conglomerate, and he's not going to be. He has ASC Master Certified Technicians, I-17 and Deer Valley Road, and that's Action Auto Repair. Andy, thanks for calling early. What's up?
Yeah, I had a very terrible incident happen to me on I-10. I was coming back from Carlsbad, and I was just about to be crossing the I-17 freeway on the I-10. And I was getting off at the next exit, 7th Avenue. And the guy in front of me, all of a sudden, I was in the middle lane about a half a mile. I moved over to the right lane. Crossing the bridge, and the guy in front of me all of a sudden just kind of pulls left. It was pretty much rush hour, like 5:15, and you know, he almost turned left, but he swerved left, and I stayed straight. And lo and behold, there's a gigantic truck tire in the middle of the freeway, and there was no place for me to go. Right off the bridge, and left is, you know, packed. But I turned my wheels left as I could. I hit that tire, and Mark, it was like hitting a brick wall.
Of course.
So I went home. They actually, I called Nissan Connect that they had somebody come out about 2.5 hours later to change my tire, and they did. And so I was leaving town that weekend to go to Denver. So I didn't have a chance to do anything with my car. And then when I got back, not the next week, but Monday.
Just get to the end of that. Okay.
Okay, the end of it is I took my car in, and the guy said, well, if the tire's canted, you need to have it aligned. So he for them to take a look at it right away. And a lady who was helping me said it'd be 1 hour. I waited an hour. She came back, said it's going to cost $1,490. And I said, why? And she told me. I said, okay, go ahead and do it. Okay. 2 days later, I called and said, when is my car going to be done? She said, oh, well, we just found out there's more damages than we thought, and it's now going to be $2,490.
Okay, stop, Andy. I don't know where we're going with this, but I have some good advice for you. You need to contact your insurance company. You need to put your insurance company with the dealer, and you need to bow out. That's it.
Thanks.
That's
so good advice.
Thanks. Yeah, because here's did we lose Andy? I think we did.
Oh, yeah, he dropped.
Okay. Andy, the deal is that this should have been reported to your insurance company at the very beginning, and they would have dictated where it was, or they would have tried to, and you could have, of course, go along with them, but take your car in, and then they negotiate with all the repair. You said you hit this car, and then all they did is replace the tire. I'm thinking to myself, there's a whole bunch more damage than what he thinks there is, because, and then he drove around on that tire and it had to pull hard right, pull hard left. There's all that moving parts, but your insurance company needs to be involved. This is a covered item, unless, of course, you just have liability. And if you have liability, this isn't covered. But if you have full coverage, it is, and you're home free. The insurance company will step in front of you and handle it. Jeff, you're up next. How can I help you?
Thank you, Mark. Jeff from Yorba Linda, California. A couple of questions for you.
Okay.
I've got a 2012 Lexus coming up on 230,000 miles. Love the car. No problems. Sometimes when I'm in town, I don't like my car to go all the way into sixth gear, so I'll pull it over to the left into the S. S means sport or select, but I like to go through the gears. When I get up on the freeway and I advance it up to sixth gear, if I leave it in sixth gear on the freeway, does my torque converter lock up as if it were in drive?
What you have to do, I can't answer that, but I'll tell you how you can answer that. So you have plan A, which is what you just described, and plan B is put it in automatic and it takes care of itself. I want you to compare speed to RPM in both of those situations. Okay?
Very good.
So yeah. if you're at 1,800 at 65 miles an hour on one, and if you're at 2,400 at 60 miles an hour on the other, then the answer is we didn't lock the converter. And
perfect.
When you manually take
yeah.
over, then we're not going to lock the converter. So just compare miles and RPM. Boom, you're done.
Perfect. I usually bump it over to drive, but sometimes I forget.
And that's
second
okay.
Question.
Either way, it's going to be okay, because I'm quite sure by the sound of your voice that you're not out there drag racing lots of people.
Second question.
Okay.
When I'm doing freeway speed, 75, maybe 75 plus, and I have to apply my brakes lightly, I'll get steering wheel chatter, you know, just back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's not. Do you know what could cause that? It doesn't do it all the time, but it's starting to do it a little bit more frequently now at 230,000.
Yeah, it's something's loose in the front end, one of the tie rod ends. That's got a rack and pinion steering in it, so we don't have a whole lot of stuff going on underneath there. But the steering wheel is shaking mm-hmm. left and right, and that typically means that one of the tires is got play in the joint, and so it's waving its tail at you, and that's what's causing the steering wheel. To diagnose this on a 1 to 10 scale for us gray-haired guys, it's about a 1. For a young buck that's been around 5 years, it's going to be a 3 or a 4 or a 5. But to be honest with you, it's real simple. One guy gets in the car and gets it up on the rack, and he turns the key on and starts it. And he takes the steering wheel, and he just goes left and right about a half an inch to an inch. An inch to the left, center back up. An inch to the right, center back up. The other older guy's underneath there, and he's just looking for a joint that isn't moving in complete synchronization. So one end of the tie rod is moving, but it takes a minute before it grabs a hold of the cup and moves on. And so it's no real big deal. If next time you take your car to a general repair shop for an oil change, and I say general repair shop because the dealers won't let you in the bays typically anyway. And I don't want you to go to a specialty shop, because if they just changed oil, they may not be real good on diagnosing front ends. But I'm quite sure you have play. It could be in an idler arm. It could – well, no, you don't have an idler arm on the rack and pinion. I'm thinking out loud. It almost has to be tie rod ends. And if you could lay down underneath the car, make sure your wife still loves you. She starts the car up, and she puts her hand on the top of the wheel, and she goes left an inch or two and then back to center, right an inch or two. And you lay down, and you look at the two tie rod ends that are connected to the rack and pinion that are attached to the wheels, and you look to make sure they move in complete synchronization, not one to the other, but there's a joint there. And the top of the joint and the bottom of the joint have to move in complete synchronization. If you find one that doesn't, that's a tie rod end and an alignment, no big deal.
Really good. I actually understood all that.
And you know what? If he didn't, I'm not going to go there, because your wife's listening, and I was going to tease you, but I'm not going to do that. And my wife, she says, I want to look underneath it. Not too long ago, we had a motorhome with the same problem. And I said, fine. She says, no, I think you'll run over me. And I said, no, I won't. Come on, you lay down and you look at, because it doesn't have rack and pinion. It has a steering box and then it has tie rod ends and center links and all that stuff. And so what we ended up finding, it was the wheel bearings. And so you could actually hear the clunk on the left and right, slight left and right turn. And we heard a clunk and it was in the wheel bearings. But that's it. Thank you very much, Jeff.
You just one more thing. You just said steer box. I think mine is steer by wire. Does that make a difference?
No, because it's going to be you're still going to have some mechanical linkage from the steering box to the front wheels.
Ah, okay.
You're still going to have that.
Hey, thanks a bunch.
You bet. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Okay, this is my China thing. If you don't like it, then just come back in 3 minutes. There's everybody out there, not everybody, but a lot of people out there insist that no China parts are made for their car. Don't use them on their car. They don't want any parts on their car. Well, my shop spends about $35,000 a month, which is about $1,750 a day buying parts for your cars. And I hear all the time, I only want GM parts. I only want Ford parts. I only want this part. I only want that part. The problem with that is from a global point of view, there is no company that makes your parts makes the part and puts it in the box. Chevrolet and Ford and Honda and Toyota and Dodge and Chrysler, they all subcontract those parts to the cheapest guy. That's all there is to it. From a global point of view, 20%, one company makes 20% of the gaskets they sell, and they buy the other 80% from other manufacturers. Other manufacturers, okay? One big company makes thermostats for the entire world. So you can buy a thermostat for your Mercedes-Benz, your Chevy, Ford, Toyota, whatever you want, and it's going to come from that company. One oil filter makes 50% of all oil filters, and he puts them in a different box. It's the same oil filter. Five worldwide companies make spark plugs. Six China companies make 90% of front wheel drive axles. Six companies in China make 90%. Eight companies in China make 75% of the motor mounts. 15 companies globally make 80% of all the batteries. USA and Korea are two of the big guys. Now, again, it's the same battery. I tell people, don't shop name brand or anything like that. Look at the weight of the battery. That's it. The heavier the battery, the more lead, the better it's made, the more power it has. That's all there is to it. But if you find something you like, then buy it. 20 manufacturers make 80% of the brake pads and shoes in the United States, and they're in 50 different boxes. 25 manufacturers make 90% of the hub and wheel bearings, and they're in 30-plus different boxes. So I'm going to give you a quick explanation, because everybody goes, that money stays in China. Okay, it doesn't. There's a guy in China that has a motor mount factory, and they went to him, and these are guys that I know that go shop and sell the parts. Not sell it, but hire the people to make the parts in China. These guys ate the food there. They live there, whatever. So he makes a motor mount for an Ultima in China, and he tells these guys, it cost me $8.25 to make it, and he sells it to them for $8.50, so he makes 50 cents. Remember that. He made 50 cents. No, he didn't. He made 25 cents, Mark. Do your math right. He made 25 cents. So then they say, okay, then we want to go ahead and buy those, and we'll give you $8.50 and let you make 25 cents. And he says, okay. So now they buy thousands of them. Then we transport them from his warehouse and factory in China. They're shipped to the West Coast. Then they're trucked to a distributor. Then they're trucked to a warehouse direct. Then they're trucked to a jobber who sells them to me and to you, like Parts Authority, O'Reilly's, Napa, AutoZone, CarQuest, etc. I buy it from the local jobber, and I get this, $45 to $50, and I sell it to you for $78. Let's look at the front and the end of this. The guy that made this part in China made 25 cents a motor mount. Mark Salem made $28 on the motor mount. Now, I have to warranty the motor mount, so there's a little bit of risk associated with that. But the overwhelming portion of the money that was made on that part is by the guy who installed it. By the guy who installed it. The guy you bought. The guys, the people that do business with me. I make more, but I also have to warranty it. So when you look at the big picture, I'm just telling you, it's not worth worrying about China. You can't know that. You're not going to know that you're going to spend the rest of your life trying to figure it out. I'm just telling you, I don't ever look at that. And we, again, we buy about $35,000 a month in parts, or $1,750 a day. We'll be back right after this. Well, 21 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're here till noon talking about cars, car repair questions, car problems, arguments between Huggies, husbands and wives and sons and dads and all that kind of stuff. 602-508-0960. That's the phone number. We have two lines of five that's already taken. So 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange in Phoenix has been around since 1968. The old guys that are north of 60 years old have been around a long time. They are without a doubt the smartest technicians that Arizona has to offer, because we've been around since we were in high school working on cars. So we've gone from points and condenser to no distributor, fuel injection, sequential fuel injection, steering by wire, steering by your wife, steering by your aunt, whatever. So, but Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around since Fred Flintstone first made the first automatic transmission, all the way today to the new electronics that are electronically shifted by the computer, speed sensors, throttle angle, and all that other jazz. So if you're looking for the best guy around that's been around a long time, then Automatic Transmission Exchange is at 40th Street in Washington, the north side of the road. He has a big sign with a transmission on it, literally. A transmission is mounted to the sign, and Phil knows what he's talking about, and he's happy to drive your car if you can get it to duplicate the problem.
I have a compound question.
Okay.
Chrysler on a engine 2.2 liter, it's a 2007 PT Cruiser. You got some engine problems, unknown situation. A, is that a timing belt or chain? If it's a belt, is that an interference engine?
I don't know. There, I mean, there's 3,000 models of cars and trucks out there. I think what you do is, I'm quite sure it's got a belt on it. I don't know if it's got an interference engine on it or not. That can be a split year kind of thing, but it's not a good idea to wait until it goes anyway. So if it's anywhere near a mileage of 70,000-80,000, then I'd go ahead and do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good luck to you, Wayne. Thank you. Jay, you're up. Jay, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. A couple questions. The first is, how important is it to be cautious if a vehicle hasn't been driven for about a year in starting it? Do you need to go through the ritual of oiling the cylinders beforehand?
No. No, I'm gonna even go back further than that. I'm gonna go back to the 50s and 60s cars. No. When you get into a car that's been sitting for a year, whether it's a newer model car or an older model car, under the best of conditions, once the motor starts, you're gonna have oil pressure immediately. And there's a film of oil that's been left on all the bearings and everything that rubs already anyway, because all oil stays there. What you want to do is you want to let it idle, maybe feather the throttle to keep it running, and then just slowly bring the idle RPM up to about 1,000, 1,200, and just kind of hold it level. And let's get the oil start circulating real good. Let's put a little bit of a pressure behind it. Let's just let it run, but running at 1,000, 1,200 RPM. And you can hear if it's too much, because it's going to idle at 600. Somewhere in drive in 550, 600. Somewhere in neutral around 600, somewhere around there. So you don't need to oil the cylinders. And besides, even if you pulled all the spark plugs and put the oil in the cylinders, as soon as the piston goes up and down once or twice, it's going to spray oil on the cylinder. So you got oil on top of the piston, and now you got oil on the cylinder, which is where you want it. And if you're not making a lot of progress.
Got it.
Okay.
Thank you on that. And then on small engine oil, like on a lawnmower or on a water pump, how important is it to use that special formula that is marked for small engine use only?
Well, here's the deal. There's a non-detergent and a detergent oil. The detergent oil holds the trash in suspension, the dirt, the grease, the metal, the stainless steel, the brass, all that stuff. It holds it in suspension. It's almost like a bean in a soup that kind of floats around. Well, a non-detergent oil lets the trash fall to the bottom, and your little lawnmower motor doesn't have a filter. so the trash goes to the bottom. To be perfectly honest with you, I would never be concerned about that. I'd buy a name brand oil. I put 30 weight in all my yard vacs, all my lawn mowers, all my everything I have that's a four-stroke motor. I just use like a 30 weight, and I find the cheapest stuff I can find. I'm not concerned about detergent or non-detergent. I'm just cheapest 30 weight I can put in it, I will. And I change it once a year. That's what I do.
Fantastic. Last question. On wheel bearings, I've seen ads from Timken and from the generic, and Timken makes out as though they have a particular strength in quality and the formulation of the steel and all that. Is that just marketing?
Yes, because I have access to all the different brands for wheel bearings. And the salesman will stop by and try to sell me what there are. But in reality, I want to look at the pricing structure of all the wheel bearings. I'm going to have, pretend, I have one at 10 and I have it one at 25 and everybody else is $14 or $15. That's my cost. And so I'm going to sell the $15 one for $24.95 or whatever, but I'm going to grab the middle. And with computers today, when I pull up that wheel bearing, I mean, I know what everybody's charging for it, all the people that are in my computer system. So all the auto parts stores, boom, I've got the information here in front of me, and I've got how long it'll take up to get here, and how much it's going to cost me, and all that kind of stuff. I've already negotiated the warranty on the parts for that particular vendor. But to be perfectly honest with you, I don't want the cheapest. I don't want the most expensive. I want a name brand in the middle that I can identify with, and then I'm done.
Excellent. Appreciate it, Mark. You're a gem. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we got lines open, and there's all five of them. The Automotive Dynamics, Chuck Nide, is a friend of mine and has been a friend of mine for a very long time. We actually date back when I was in high school. And he ran a gas station in Tempe. So I didn't work for him, but I just knew that he had a gas station because my boss was his best friend. Nevertheless, Chuck's been around for a long time. This shop has been open since 1982, and their staff and their mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill because Chuck doesn't want them ever to sell unnecessary parts or repair. Now, I must tell you, in defense of all the rest of the guys that do pay commissions, all of us have that same feeling. We don't want our guys to be selling parts and labor just because they get a beggar commission. And we have facilities within our organization to make sure that doesn't happen. But nevertheless, Automotive Dynamics is on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. And unfortunately, when you call me and you say, I need a good shop in Sun City, I'm going to tell you about Automotive Dynamics. There's lots of shops, but I know them. I vetted them, and I know that he'll take care of customers that are unhappy very reasonably and oftentimes bend in their way when I kind of wonder why he did that, because when the car left, it didn't have a big crash dent on the right front fender, but then evidently somewhere down the line, they blamed it on the shop, and sometimes Chuck just says it's not really worth fighting about if it's going to be a $30, $40, $50 argument, and I agree with him. I've caved in as well, and just stopped the madness really early because it was just insignificant. So Automotive Dynamics, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We're going to go back to the phones. I'm going to tell you real quick about Blackwell Automotive. Folks, geographically in the Phoenix area, I'm trying to do my best to identify shops that kind of have a circle around them. And Blackwell's the one that's got the northeast quadrant of Phoenix, Scottsdale, the whole valley area. He's got that covered. He's at 40th Street and Greenway. He's a great guy. He does old vintage cars. He does motorhomes. He does mom-and-pop cars. He does trucks, off-road vehicles. He does all of it because they have the skill level to do all of it. And frankly, a Nissan pickup truck's not much different than a Toyota pickup truck. Nevertheless, if you're in that area and you need an oil change or you just want to stop by and have somebody look at something underneath your hood, then stop by Tom Blackwell's at 40th Street in Washington. He's a good guy. Eric, you're up. How can I help you this morning?
Hi, I got a 2001 Dodge Ram pickup truck with 435,000 miles. Recently, I had the turbo injectors, a fuel module replaced on it, but still having the same problem where the engine at different speeds and I'm trying to figure out what's going on with the power on it.
Is it gas or diesel?
But it's a diesel. It's okay. 2,500 gas.
And how much did all that work cost you?
I had some other stuff done with this with the radiator, but probably over 4,000 with everything.
Okay.
So I had a fuel tank on my last trip at a relief valve on it. Suck the tank in.
So yeah.
I had to take the tank out and let it pop back out and change the fuel module so we get back to normal.
Okay, but all of this $4,000 worth of work didn't fix your problem, right?
No, there was concern that I had on it.
Okay. Well, I'm real concerned about that because $4,000 later, all you've been doing is paying for guessing, and somebody's been able to say, to sell you on the idea that this was a good thing to do. We need to do this, but it's not related to what you really want us to focus on. If it's a diesel, if you live in North Phoenix, strictly diesel service, did you go to Strictly?
No, there was another local place that was near me. Some of that money was like taking the radiator out and cleaning, and I had a little leak on the front and it sucked in a bunch of oil, and they tried to salvage the radiator by hot hosing it. And
what part of town do you live in?
I'm off of Thunderbird and 17 Highway.
Okay. Well, Pinnacle Peak and the 17 is as close as I can get you. I know Nate is it Strictly Diesel can fix your truck, but that's who I would go to. I can't fix your truck, and besides, you've compounded everything because of all this stuff you've had done, and that really creates a big problem for those of us that own repair shops, because oftentimes we go in and we're forced to retest and figure out why this part was put on, and then we have to make sure that it's the right part and it's the right serial number and it's the right and it just creates all kinds of havoc. But Nate is your best guy, and I think that you should to just bring the story down to something that you can manage in 2 minutes. And this is the symptoms I have right now. What's your checkout fee? And that's how I would handle it. Nate at Strictly Diesel. Okay, good luck.
I know it has two fuel pumps on it. I was wondering if maybe one of the fuel pumps providing enough.
Well, here's the problem. Wait a minute. Here's the problem. You've never talked about any symptoms. How the hell am I going to know whether a fuel pump has anything to do with it when all you've told me is all the repairs you've made? I need symptoms, and that's, does it make any difference at high speeds where the demand for fuel is high when you're hauling your trailer? Is it hot or cold related? Does it make any difference when the fuel tank is at a quarter, half full, whatever? Those are the kinds of conversations that have to happen. But you've already spent a lot of money on the truck, and to be perfectly honest with you, I wouldn't tell anybody you just spent $4,000 because that's going to scare them off. They're going to think, oh, well, obviously he wants to direct the repair. He wants to tell us how to fix it. He wants to bid the repair. And then he says, well, wait a minute, it didn't fix it. And go, wait a minute, I didn't fix anything. You told me to do 1, 2, and 3, and I did that. I didn't know I was supposed to fix something. Those are the problems. I'm giving you the best advice I can. Go to Nate. Keep it simple. That's what I'd say. Jim, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. I just wanted to say thank you for your show. I've been listening for years.
Thank you.
1 minute.
I heard you say last week that, if I heard correctly, that there is no such thing as an all four-wheel drive.
Well,
I have a RAV4 2000, and it's supposed to be, I was under the impression it was all four-wheel drive.
Okay. What we were talking about last week, and I did catch quite a bit of comments about that. A four-wheel drive vehicle that locks both differentials so at all times all four wheels are attached to the engine. In order to do that, you can get a positraction rear end differential. And that means positraction means I'm sending power to both rear wheels. That's okay. The problem is with the steering wheels, the two front ones. We can't make a 90-degree left turn with a locked differential because the inner tire of the circle wants to make one revolution and the outer tire wants to make five because the arc is bigger. So what the gentleman was saying is he has full-time four-wheel drive. And we start talking about that, and in reality what was going on is he was told that he had four wheels pulling all the time, and I said to him, unless you have a locker front end like the Jeeps do, there's some Jeeps that have locker front ends, you don't have four-wheel drive. You have three-wheel drive. Now, if you're so you do four-wheel drive is both rears and one and sometimes two of the front. If the car's going straight down the road, the front drive shaft is energizing both front wheels. But we have to be able to let them rotate at different speeds when we turn left. And that's all there is to it. So if you have a four-wheel drive, you have a four-wheel drive. You just, in the worst-case scenario, in the worst sand and the mud and the biggest mess you can get yourself into when you're spinning the tires, more than likely only three of them are going to spin. And that's just the way it is. And, you know, put it this way to you, Jim. If you're in neck-deep mud, or if you're off the road, or if you're on a big hill going down or going up or whatever, one more tire isn't going to make any difference if you can't move right now.
So, okay. One more thing.
Okay.
My right front will go up, but it won't go down. And I heard you on a show one time to hit the side of the door, and I did that, and sometimes it works. Most of the time, it doesn't. What do you have a rough idea on what it would? You said there was a solenoid.
Well, there's a window motor in there, and the motor has brushes on it, and the brushes wear out, and then you hit the. I did this the other day. We had a guy came over and did some yard work at the ranch up north. And it was raining, and his window wouldn't go up. It's a true story. I walk over there and said, Javier, get in your truck, start it up, push the button up. Oh, the windows don't work. Push the button up. And so I opened the door, and with my fist, I hit the inner door panel hard twice. Boop, the window went up. And I said, it needs a new motor. So the motor's going to cost you anywhere from $150, and the labor's going to be, gosh, depending on accessibility, the labor can be $150 to $300. So, but this is something that's easy to bid, and I'm giving you generalities, and I'm giving you a big window because I don't want to get caught with my pants down. I don't want 20 of my friends calling me and saying, "Oh, you came in way too low on that bid." They don't ever call when I set the ceiling kind of high, not knowing where you're going to go. So, just say, this is what happened to me, and I hit here, and it began to work. Can you diagnose that and call me with an estimate, and what's your checkout fee? Most of us gray-haired guys are going to go, we don't need a checkout fee. You told us what we needed to know. I'm going to bid a window motor installed. That's it. That's what I would do. Okay?
Thank you again.
Okay, you bet. Thank you. And, Bob, you stay there. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We've got open lines available. We've got four right now. Bob's got one, and I'm going to get to him in just a minute, maybe 90 seconds. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The show goes into the next at 11 o'clock hour all the way till noon, so we have lots of time. Just real quick, we were just talking to Jim just a minute ago, and we were talking about four-wheel drive vehicles, and I did get a young man named Marshall Gersten that's been a friend of mine for 20 or 30 years. He also is a retired guy, and he owned a shop. I really respect him. He's really, really very good. But anyway, he wrote me down, and he said, on the show, I was stumbling around trying to think of something that had a lockable front end, something really four-wheel drive, real manly, and I couldn't think of anything. And he texted me, Rubicon, front locker. The Jeep Rubicon does have a locking front differential, and as I understand it, you can manually apply the locking or not, but it won't let you damage the front end either. So it's not going to let you go out there and do circles and spin all four tires as you show off to all the guys in the parking lot of the local Hooskow place on Saturday night. So there is a vehicle that's made with a front locking differential, and it's called a Rubicon. And if Marshall says that's it, then I believe him. Bob, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. My son's in Florida. He has a 2014 GMC Sierra, and he had an oil change done a couple weeks ago. And they told him he had 2 millimeters left on his brake pads.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be driving home next week. from Florida to Scottsdale. So I'm worried. What do you think about 2 millimeters on the brake pad?
Well, I think a couple things. We're 2 millimeters away from metal to metal. I also know that he's going to drive 100 miles before he touches the brakes, or even further than that, depending on how studly he is and how long it takes that he needs to stop at a bathroom, how much beer his buddies are drinking. I'm going to throw that in. So I'm not real worried about that. I would say to him, try to conserve your brakes. Maybe do a little downshifting in the automatic. Bring it down out of overdrive into drive, and then bring it into 3 and then 2, whatever. Just do your best to kind of coast. Pretend like you don't have any brakes, and he'll drive from where he's at to your house with no problem at all. and no, it's just really a matter of let's conserve the brakes in 2 millimeters. That's going to be, I can't put that in miles and I can't put that in time. There's too many variables. But I do know that you and I could drive from Florida to Arizona on I-10 and we could get here with 2 millimeters. We would just pay attention to the brakes. Now, if you want, tell him to take it to a garage close by and you wire the horn into the brake light circuit. And I can guarantee you he'll make it from Florida to Arizona, because every time he touches the brakes, the horn's going to honk, and he'll make it with no problem at all.
I got one other quick question.
Okay.
You know, when I look on Rock Auto brake pads, you know, I mean, they range, you know what the spectrum is, right? $15 to $75 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I asked the shop we go to, it's one of those, like you said, you know, mm-hmm. and they just said they'll use whatever brake pads are appropriate for the vehicle.
That's but, a cheat. Let me give you the acronym, CS answer. What they're saying is they buy the cheapest pads no matter what. There's all of us have a relationship with parts vendors, and we kind of know what the cheap and the most expensive, and I think you'll agree most of us are going to buy from 50% north of that, 50, 60% there. We're not going to buy the premium dogs. We're not going to buy the cheap ones. We're not going to do that. And really what they should say is really, we just don't know. We've hung our hat on Raybestos, and that's kind of what we're buying for all of our cars, or Napa or whatever. And keep in mind, Napa doesn't make brake shoes. They just buy them from Raybestos or any of the rest of the companies and put them in their own boxes. So I don't know that I'd get real wrapped up. The good news is all the brakes are made to a minimum specification, and they have to be. So there's going to be some cheap ones in there, but they're still going to perform admirably. They're just going to be a little soft and throw some dust. That's about it. The hard ones, they squeak. They last forever, but they squeak. And so somewhere in the middle is where you want to be, and I think price is where you... So if at the pricing mark, buy the one that's at 60% in the middle there, and you'll be fine. Okay?
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break here in another 8 minutes. And then we're going to go on for another hour, and you're always welcome to join us. And we have another caller right now. Who might that be?
Say hello to Brian.
Brian, good morning.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
I think your show, I've only heard it twice, but hopefully you can help me. I got a 1991 Isuzu Pup, and it's chewing up gas real bad.
Okay, can you smell the catalytic converter? Can you smell the rotten eggs?
Both cats have been replaced.
Okay. Well, is it a carbureted or fuel injected? I think it's a carbureted, that old, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got all the smog gear on it.
Okay.
The air pump and everything, and it was surging for a while. But we finally got that taken care of and had the carburetor rebuilt, which it's got a solenoid in it, so I don't know if it's carbureted or fuel injected, or
okay.
Exactly what it is.
What typically goes on is most of us still have what we call infrared analyzers, which we put the probe in the tailpipe of the car, and we can tell if it's running rich. We want the CO to be somewhere around 1 or 2. Cars come in at 7, 8, 9. These are cars that if you lock yourself in your garage, you're going to be dead in 10 minutes. But if we trim down the CO down to 1% or less, then you're going to die of starvation before you die of carbon monoxide poisoning. So it really is a matter of somebody that is capable. Now, if it's a carburetor, you have an idle circuit, you have a cruise circuit, and then you have a wide open throttle circuit. obviously, if the floats are set too high, then we're going to flood the carburetor, and it's going to run real rich, and you're going to smell lots of rotten eggs. But you don't have any catalytic converter on yet because all the emission stuff's been removed, so it's going to run real rich.
No. The emission stuff is still there.
Okay.
It's also there. It has two catalytic converters on it that are new.
Okay.
Air
pump just pumps air into the catalytic converter because we need air and fuel in order for the catalytic converter to glow bright red on the inside. So that's why we have air pumps. And after that, we decided we didn't really need air pumps, and the catalytic converters were installed or created a little bit better. The fact of the matter is all you need is you call around and say, have you got an infrared analyzer? Can you measure my CO and my HC out of my tailpipe? And most places will charge you anywhere from $15 to $50. Then the next question is if it's real high, can you adjust it down? Now, keep in mind, we're only looking at the idle circuit. We're not looking at the cruise and the wide open throttle circuit, just the idle. But that's where 90% of the problems are at, is the idle circuit.
Okay. So I have to take a trip to Minnesota in this truck, and I just don't want it to eat up the gas like it is.
And what part of town are you in?
I'm in the west side, Sunny Slope area.
Okay, if I were you, I'd go to Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Those guys can handle this. You say to them, I'm concerned about the tailpipe emissions. I'm concerned I'm running too rich or too lean. I want you just to check the tailpipe and tell me what I need to do to bring it into range. That's what I would say to them.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Anyway, yeah, Harker's Automotive has been around since Jesus was a baby. I think they sure started in 1968. Bob and Ellen have owned and operated Harker's Automotive for a whole long time. When you walk in, you'll meet Ellen. Bob is in the shop. They have a nephew there, and this kid is a wonder kid. I wish I remembered his name, but I don't. But he is just a great, great technician. And when he's on the radio with Bob and I, sometimes we just were real quiet and let him talk because he's just so really, really good. But Bob is too, and Bob is really good in the older cars, just like I am. But we have the technical expertise to understand fuel spark and timing. And it really doesn't make any difference if it's a carburetor or fuel injection. We're still going to do the same thing. Well, on fuel injection, we're going to open and close the nozzle. So at idle, it sounds like this. And at wide open throttle, it sounds like a fire hose. A carburetor didn't work that way. At idle, we just shut the faucet a little bit. Oh, that's not far enough. Let's shut it off a little bit more. And on wide open throttle, we opened it as fast as we could. So you can see the difference, electronics and the old stuff. But Harker's is really, really good. And so if you live in that area, if they do oil changes and everything else, but if you live in that area in that 38th Avenue and Indian School and you've got a problem with your car on a drivability issue, you know, it doesn't start on Thursday mornings at 8 o'clock, Harker's is really the place to go. 602-508-0960, and I'll take it. Who's that?
Say hello to Hector.
Hector, good morning.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
I was calling because I have a 2007 Honda Pilot with about 250,000 miles. I changed the air filter, did the timing belt, and also did an ATS cleaning solution for the fuel, but it's still running about 12% rich, or it's giving 12% towards long-term fuel. I was wondering if you had any ideas of what I should do before I spend a lot more money.
Well, I can't tell you what's wrong with it, but, I mean, is the canister got a bunch of fuel in it? Do you have a problem with the evaporative canister? Are you stuffing the tank, which then contaminates the canister, and the canister is supposed to suck just the fumes off the fuel tank? But in the case of many people, they stuff the tank, which gives the canister liquid gas, and once you get that in there, it could be months before you settle down to what comes out of the tailpipe. Once we flood the canister, then we have an evaporative system where we're supposed to suck the vapors off the tank and get there. And oftentimes, if the evaporative system goes down, it starts sucking liquid fuel. You can also have just the idle, and then you have an idle circuit, you have a cruise circuit, and you have a wide open throttle circuit. You have three different circuits. Which one of those guys is causing the problem? Which one of those guys is out of range? So I can't possibly tell you what's causing it to run rich and stink and smell or whatever, but those are the areas of concern you're going to have to. An O2 sensor can cause it. A MAP sensor can cause it. A vacuum line to the MAP sensor can cause it. An air leak in the tube from the mass airflow sensor can cause it. you have all these different moving parts to where we measure the amount of air going into the motor, and it's not very much. And we look at the chart, it says add this much fuel. But in reality, that's lying to us. So we add the fuel, but that's not enough. So you're going to spend anywhere from $75 to $200 to have somebody look at it and tell you what's the matter with it. And there's a 25% chance that finding it and fixing it are the same amount of money. So
okay, I will take it in then. Thank you very much. Right. I appreciate the help.
You bet. Good luck to you, Hector. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm really
one
is...
minute.
Say that again?
1 minute.
1 minute, yeah. Gil's just telling me, he says, Mark, don't forget, we need to get out in 1 minute. And actually, it's not 1 minute because I've already used 11 seconds just messing around, doing nothing. Nevertheless, and Gil's not doing anything anyway, so we have open lines. We have five of them, so you can all call at the same time. Are you ready? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Because if you all call right now, then Gil will go crazy because in 30 seconds he has to push a whole bunch of buttons and plays the news, the weather, and the sports, and all that other kind of stuff. And at 50 seconds after this minute, I'm going to say goodbye to you, which is actually 20 seconds away, and Gil's going to be inundated with phone calls. And I feel so sorry for him. But you know what? He can handle it because he's really good. Gil and I have been together for 11 years. And if I sound good, he's 99% of the reason why. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back to hour number two of Under the Hood with Mark Salem. We're going to be here till noon talking about car and car repair questions and problems and stuff. We have open lines available, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Before we take our first caller, let me tell you about another repair shop. Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. And while they were on vacation, that storm that blew through town took the roof off their shop. So they're really struggling with respect to getting it back up, getting the technicians back to work, and of course all the rain damage and water damage inside the shop. It's the only shop in Mesa I refer to, because it's the only shop I can do that with complete confidence that Brian and Thelma will treat you fairly. It's not that you're not going to have, somebody's going to have, not going to have a dispute, because I have customers and we have disputes. It's really how you guys come together, how the customer and how the shop. Sometimes it's the shop's issue is do I really want to keep this person? 99 times out of 100, the answer is yes. And as a result of that, then the shop typically will come to some kind of agreement with the shop. But I haven't had a complaint on Thompson's in probably 10 years. So if you don't have a shop, then perhaps Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street and Stapley would be appropriate. And at this particular point, they could use the business when they get their business up and running. So Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Andy, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I was just wondering, my son had a 98 Chevy dually. 3500.
Okay.
And it's got about 125,000 miles on it. And he just bought it from my brother-in-law. And he's wanting to go through and get it all fixed up. And he's thinking about getting the transmission oil changed. And I talked to my brother-in-law, and he says he's never changed the transmission oil. It's got 125,000 miles on it.
Okay. I think I would merge two jobs into one. If he does just the tranny, if he just does the transmission service and he pulls the pan, then it's 3 quarts of oil and a filter. The problem is there's 6 to 8, maybe even more quarts in the cooler, in the lines, and in the transmission. So I think you do two at once. I think you pull the pan. First of all, you flush it. And so we're going to do that up underneath the hood where the cooler lines go into the cooler. We're going to interface there. And then we're going to shove clean fluid in, and there we use clear lines on our machines. And then we have clear lines coming back. Well, we're sending in red cherry fluid, and we're getting back gray water, what looks like gray water, which is old transmission fluid. Well, and the inlet line is cherry red, and we wait until the outlet line is cherry red. and then we shut it off.
Gotcha.
And then we pull the pan and change the filter, add another quart, and we're done. That's what I would do at 126,000 miles. Now, you're going to get some of the people that are going to tell you, neighbors, friends, and people on the internet, especially Mr. Google, somewhere in there you're going to find it. Oh, you can't do that because it'll wash all the trash that's holding the transmission together, and the transmission will never move again. That's BS. Okay, that's not true. It's an old wives' tale. It's been around since I was a little bitty boy. It's been around since 1968.
Well, exactly, and that's what I was telling them myself. But I thought, you know what? I'll call Mark and maybe get the real answer here.
It was never that way. There's no such thing as scrubbing bubbles with transmission fluid. What happened is when we flush it, we'd flush the filter, plug the filter, the transmission wouldn't move, and they'd go, oh, it's because of the flush. No, it isn't. It's because we took all the trash and put it in the filter, and now it's not going to move. And so that's why I say flush first, get fluid, and then you're going to pull the pan, replace the filter, you're going to clean up whatever clutch material is still in the pan with some solvent, put the pan back on, and you're good for another 100K.
Right, and just ballpark, what does something like that usually run?
Probably $250 to $300. You're going to have 10, 12 quarts. You're going to have a filter and a gasket, and you're going to have 2 hours worth of labor, at least 2 hours worth of labor. And most everybody's in the $120 to $150, $160 range. So I'm guessing the best I can.
All right. Hey, Mike, I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, you betcha. Don, you're up next. How can I help you, Don?
Good morning, Mr. Mark. I just want to relay the highest regards for you from Thompson's Automotive in Mesa.
Oh.
I haven't met or talked to Brian and Thelma, but I'm dealing with Joey, their son.
Uh-huh.
He's an absolute phenomenal guy to work with. He locked down a new engine. They're hard to find for my 2001 GMC.
Mm-hmm.
There were only two in the whole area. He went through all the prices for delivery dates and from dealers and everything, and I think we determined that these two engines, parts in Phoenix, one was 83,000, one was 119,000 miles. Anyway, the engine's paid for, and I'm in the system for an engine change by Thompson around the end of the month, and I have no worries. I have extreme, complete confidence in Thompson's, and They have the highest regards for you. They all know you really well.
Well, let me tell you the backstory. In 1968, when I was a freshman in high school. In 1968, I went to work for Ken Vivian, and he had a Shell station on Broadway and Priest in Tempe, and I pumped gas for him. And he's directly responsible for who I am today. Others are too, but anyway, the Vivian family and the Thompson family dominated gas stations in the 60s and the 70s. So you had Cecil Thompson, had a Shell station and a variety of Shell stations. And then you had the Vivian boys, had a Union 76 and a Shell here and something else here and something else here. But they were all the very best of friends. They were all the very best of friends, which was unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, Brian and Thelma come from those two families.
Oh.
So one of them's a Thompson and one of them's a Vivian. And so those two young people have been around, well, actually they weren't even born back then, I don't think. But nevertheless, they both had dinner with somebody who smelled like gasoline. They grew up with somebody smelling like gasoline. I can tell you that.
Oh, okay. On your subject of four-wheel drives,
mm-hmm. Yes,
I worked for an old hay farmer up in Reno, my hometown.
Uh-huh.
And he had a 66 Ford, I don't remember, a 360 or a 260 V8?
Yeah, 360.
With four-wheel drive, and he had the Warn locking front hub.
Uh-huh.
And I worked at a Learfan at Reno in snow country.
Yeah.
And I could lock those front hubs, and I could throw up four rooster tails in the mud and snow from all four wheels. That thing would climb a telephone pole.
Yes, yes.
I bought it from the farmer. I guess he had a special rig towing bar set up, welded frame. He was towing his mowers and his rakes and the hay rakes, you know, and the harvesters and the balers and everything behind his truck in the fields. He's using it as a tow tractor.
Yes, yeah.
Until he finally could find some self-propelled haying equipment. Then I bought the old truck and went through it. But I had a friend there with a Dodge four-wheel drive, and I could outperform him in the snow and mud. Only one front wheel and one rear wheel would throw up a rooster tail in the snow.
Okay, so, let's explain that for everybody else. Hold on. Let's explain it for everybody else. The differential allows the two tires that are connected to the differential to rotate at different speeds so the truck can make a left turn or a right turn.
Right.
All right, we do have locking differentials. We have only one that I know of, the Rubicon, that has a locking front differential. Let me explain. You can throw four rooster tails, but if I lock up that front wheel and I put it in a big hole and I stop it from spinning, there's a good chance that you're only going to have three rooster tails at that point. Because if the front differential was locked, as you made a turn, it would go, and it would chirp the tires in a the whole turn. So the front differential has to unlock so you can turn it. But yes, you're right. And he probably had something special, and he may have had a locker on the front end. I don't know if they made them back then. Because he needed a lot of horsepower, a lot of cubic inches, and he needed some big studly, manly tires to pull hay rakes through the field with a pickup truck. So.
Right.
Sure, yeah, he did. All righty. Well, Don, thank you very much.
He was a beast. Thanks,
yes.
Mark. And keep her going.
All righty. Thank you very much. Oh, you know, in the old days, this is the difference. In the old days, we worked on your car every 5,000 miles. We did the oil changes at 2 or 3. We did spark plugs at 5 to 10. We did fluids from 10 to 15. It was just, that's the way it was. And obviously today, it's altogether different. But here's the biggest distinction between the cars made in 60s and the cars made in the last, well, since the year 2000. Let's do that, the last 20 years. If you lock yourself in a garage because you want to go meet your maker, or you put your dog in your garage because you want him to go to heaven. If you put him in with an old car, he's going to be dead in an hour. If you put him in it with your wife's new Lexus, he'll die of hunger and starvation before he dies of inhalation of anything that's going to kill him. Because that's the way it is. Newer model cars today have virtually no emissions by the time we go through a particulate filter, a catalytic converter, a muffler, and all the other stuff. So back then in the old days, in the 60s, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, ooh, baby, you could smell them rich burning cars on Main Street when you on Friday night. You could tell who was dumping raw fuel down the engine. You could see the black smoke out of the tailpipe. And we probably had a lot to do with the environment back then of the cars that we hopped up and made go fast. The more you fuel you could pour down the throat of that engine, the faster it would go. We didn't care about the black smoke behind us because we didn't know better. But today, it's altogether different. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And if you have any questions and or comments, you can always email me, mark@marksalem.com.
1 minute.
mark@marksalem.com. Marksalem.com is our website address, and you can and get me there. If you'll give me your phone number, I'll call. I typically call you back if I want to have an interchange or I have questions to ask you. It's cheaper and less taxing of my time to sit there and do 22 emails back and forth. I always call from a blocked line, so it's going to come through as a blocked line, and typically when you tell me, I'll send you a note back saying, hey, I'm going to call you in the next couple hours. So that's kind of how it works. It makes it better for me and makes it better for you, and it makes better use of our time. Anyway, the email address, though, if you have a question or comment, then that's fine. mark@marksalem.com. Mark is spelled with his K, and Salem is just like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M. We do have a shop. This show is not about my shop. We're like everybody else right now. We're booked weeks in advance. We've been blessed with we've been in business in the Tempe and Ahwatukee area and the Mesa area since 1978. So it's not like we're going to blow away anytime soon. And right now, the second generation of Salems is running our organization, which is my oldest son and my youngest daughter. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. You know, the auto repair industry right now is just, if you're planning on having any work done, you better plan on making an appointment, because right now we are all up to our ears in alligators. because COVID, people were home. They had a lot of time to bring their cars in. And to be perfectly honest with you, every shop I know has not hit the top of that mountain yet. We're all just inundated with repair work and stuff like that. So if you're looking for a good shop, then go to MarkSalem.com. And I have a list of the car shops that I know of are just really great. But we're looking for technicians. So if you know somebody who's a technician and an ASE certified, we're interested in talking to them because we're going to hire more just because we're weeks out and we just need more. In the past 5 years, we've had two openings, and here's why. Eddie's been with us 33 years, Andy, 28, Alan, 25, Andy, another Andy, she's a lady, 23, Adam, 21, Ron, 8, Sean, 8, Daniel, 5, John, 5, and then we have Nate that's been there a year, and we're hiring more, but people hang around because we have 401k, we have health, dental, uniform, sick time, vacation. So we do. The technicians in my world are the ones that pull the wagon. I get to ride in the wagon. They have to pull it. So obviously they're an integral part of our organization. Plus, we only work Monday through Friday. So if you know anybody who's a technician that's looking for a job, then would you send them my way, mark@marksalem.com, or just go to marksalem.com. Brian, good morning. How can I help you?
Hello?
Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
You there?
Yes, sir.
Oh. I have an 03 F-250, 6.0, about 75,000 miles on it. And I have a chronic issue I've just kind of put up with for years. Every time I go up the hill to Flagstaff or Payson or up on the rim, it loses all bottom end torque. When I come to a stop sign or a stoplight, when I come back down off the hill, everything goes to running back perfectly fine.
Okay. Let me ask you some questions. Is there any smoke?
The higher in elevation I go, the more smoke it'll put out, and it's only from like a stop. You know, I hit the throttle, and it'll probably take 5-6 seconds for the turbo to start spooling up.
Okay, I don't want you to. No. Let me rephrase my question. If you have smoke, what color is it?
Hello.
If you have smoke, what color is it?
It's black.
Okay. Okay. Well, what part of town do you live in? What part of town do you live in?
West Valley.
Okay.
West.
Okay.
303 area.
I'd probably go to Strictly Diesel. No, I would not probably. I would. Go talk to Nate at Strictly Diesel. You're 6.0, as you know, and if you don't know, I'm going to tell you, is the biggest piece of trash Ford's ever made. It's a terrible motor. However, many of the concerns have been dealt with by the aftermarket. Many of the concerns are things that we can now fix successfully. Many of the concerns are fixable. It's just a terrible motor. And it's a big problem in every aspect of fuel delivery and mechanical aspects and timing and everything. But it's salvageable, and we now know how to fix it, where perhaps 8 years ago we didn't know how to fix it, and neither did the dealers or anybody else. So we've made tremendous progress, but Nate at Strictly Diesel is your guy because he's a 6.0 expert. He can probably talk to you and probably get real close on what's the matter with it. But when he asks you a question, just answer the question. Don't guess. And if you don't know, say, I don't know. But just answer the question because Nate's real focused on that kind of stuff. And he may even talk to you on the telephone if you'll just stick with the symptoms. Okay, we're not interested in what somebody else said it was. We're not interested in the past repairs that you've done. We're not interested in what the guy Google said. We're not interested in any of that. We want to talk to the driver, and we want to say, what's the problem? You have a fuel starvation problem, it sounds like. And if that's the case, then is it a fuel starvation problem through the fuel system or through the injectors? Or are we opening and closing the injectors the proper amount for the load that you're pulling up the mountain? Those are the questions, and Nate's a good guy for that. So Nate at Strictly Diesel would be my thing. Good luck to you, Brian. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You can grab one if you want. We've got another 34 minutes left in the show. And we got another caller right now. Who might that be?
Say hello to Nick.
Nick, good morning.
Morning, Mark. I got a question for you. For the manual, the car manual, would you say we're severe weather in Arizona?
You know, that's an argument that you can get 30%, you can get 50% of the guys to go left and 50% of the guys to go right. I don't think so. I think I'm going to draw the line. I'm going to try to draw the middle out of the two different ones your owner's manual gives you. They may say, hey, if you're in this category, change your oil at 8,000 miles. And if you're in this category, change your oil at 5,000 miles. And I'm going to pick the middle.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a question then on a transmission flush.
Okay.
How does the new transmission fluid get in the torque converter?
Because we're going to take the two cooler lines off of the cooler in front of the radiator, and our machine's going to suck on one line and push on the other, and our machine's loaded with cleaned fluid and all the lines are clear. So when we start your car up and we start cycling through the gears, then the other guy's watching the machine, and as we pump in fresh pink, we're getting the brown coming out, and we just keep flushing until both lines have pink. Then we shut it off. We button everything up. Then we pull the pan. We clean the pan. It's going to have pink fluid in it, but there's going to be some clutch material and some trash in the bottom. We're going to clean the pan, put a new filter on it, and you're done. That's what I would do.
So is there a hose going into the torque converter, or is it forced in there?
No, we're going to be running the motor.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to be running the motor. So, the answer is because the flywheel's driving the torque converter, as we're running the engine, we are circulating that fluid, and we're using the transmission to help suck and push.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good enough. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
You have a good day.
You bet. It is interesting. There's lots of chatter with Mr. Google and all of his buddies who, you know, the worst part about the stuff on the internet, folks, is you don't know who the person is that's giving you advice. There's all kinds of people out there that represent themselves as what they aren't. There's all kinds of guys that can tell you that they can fix your car over the internet, and I don't even say that, and I've been a master technician since 1991. I've owned a shop myself since 1979. So I've been around the block, but I don't even tell you I can fix your cars. But the give and take I have with you is really what the shop should do. Ask questions. Your gasoline is terrible. Your fuel economy is terrible. Black smoke? No. Do you ever smell like rotten eggs? Yes. Okay, well, you're not getting black smoke. That means it's running rich. On the other hand, you smell rotten eggs. That means the catalytic converter is overcome with raw fuel. So you've answered my question. The thing is running rich. But one question was a no, and one question is a yes. And see, that's how it works. That's why we have this back and forth between the shop and the customer. There also is a problem that sometimes you're dealing with somebody who just has a list of questions that they write down, and maybe you want to talk to somebody else. You can also ask to talk to the shop foreman. On Monday mornings and Friday afternoons, that ain't going to happen for obvious reasons. But, A, yes, you can talk to the shop foreman, but he's going to call you back. And please try to control the time frame to 2 or 3 minutes. Just give him a concern or ask him the question. That happens. But if you have a shop and that you trust, then chances are you're way past that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. 33 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and my name is Mark Salem, and we're talking about cars and car repair and all that jazz, and we're going to go straight to the phones. Mark and JR, you're number one and number two, and you can be 3, 4, or 5 if you call 602-508-0960. Mark, good morning.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. I'm good.
Good. I have a 2010 Ford F-150, and I have a transmission question, or I think it is, between, say, 30 and 40 miles or 50 and 60 miles an hour highway speed, I get a thud, and it's like it's jumping gears or whatnot. And it did this before I had a transmission replaced, and it even did it after I got a brand-new transmission.
Okay. There's two things that we know of for sure that cause this kind of symptom.
Okay.
I'll get it right. Number one, climate controls. You make sure you turn off all your climate controls. So no air conditioning, no okay. blower motor, no nothing. We don't want the compressor cycling, causing it, the engine to sound like it has a miss, or the transmission that just shifted from fourth to fifth or fifth to fourth or whatever. So let's turn off all the climate controls. And here's the bottom line. You need to figure out okay. how you can make this happen so you can show somebody at a shop that will save you $50 to $100. Just show them how to make it happen.
Okay.
The second thing is when you get to this point, you can manually take it out of overdrive and just go to drive in your F-150. So I want you to drive around and drive and not OD for a while and see if the problem is there
or not.
I
think I lost,
Okay. And then second thing is when it when you can get it to happen on a regular basis, then just drag your left foot on the brake light switch enough to shine the switch but not enough to slow it down and see if that makes a difference. And,
okay.
and then the last answer to the unknown question is you won't know if it's related to the flush until we find out what it is. And once we find out what it is, we can say, yeah, the flush aggravated it, or the flush actually washed a whole bunch of clutch material out of the pan into the filter, and then this valve body component actually went bad because it's filled with clutch material. So those are the kinds of things that happen, but they're few and far between. The best thing you can do is learn how to make it happen every time. And if you want, you can go down to Automatic Transmission Exchange or call them first, Automatic Transmissions Exchange on Washington, and say, I can guarantee that I can make this happen. Can I borrow somebody for maybe 10 minutes? If you say something like that, they're going to hug you when you get there. Because everybody else shows okay. up and takes them for a two-hour ride. I promise I can make this happen. Let me try it this way. Let me try it this way. And I've got a technician driving around with somebody who hasn't brushed their teeth in 400 years and drinking out of a brown paper bag. So we don't like that kind of stuff. But if you can make it happen and you look them in the eye and say, give me your senior transmission tech, I'm going to show him how to do this, they're probably going to hug you.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. You bet. You bet. JR, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark, and thank you for the great service that you render to us aficionados of trying to fix your own vehicle.
No, it's my pleasure. I have fun with this. You know what? The best part of this show, I've been doing it since 1988, is the people I meet. It's just we have a lot in common. And then often, I met a guy the other day that was a wealth advisor, and he invested money. And so I start talking to him about, this is kind of what I do, and this is what I'm told to do. And he goes, I like this, this, and this, but this right here, I think you should do it this way. So I call my guy, and I said, hey, if I move this over here, and he goes, you know, that is the new thought, and I agree with that. And I'm going, ching, I like that. So, I get some stuff out of it, too.
Yeah, well, I think it's the same thing. The circle of your radio audience and yourself are people trying to know and try to move forward with things, and that's a good sign.
Yeah.
Some areas of America, it's a good sign. But question being, here's a do-it-yourselfer project. I had a mechanic come over and align the front wheels on a 1999 Chrysler minivan. Well, hey, that's pretty darn good. I'm looking. How is a double check? I saw something in Car and Driver or Road and Track years ago where they had a do-it-yourself alignment with string and jack. I think they had the car jacked up on all four wheels, so you could run the string from your back wheel somehow to your front bumper to kind of get a straight line from the back wheels to the front wheels. Is that still the way to go, or on an old Chrysler minivan, can you just jack baby up and put a string somewhere, and as long as you get those front wheels out, because what this guy did, he towed it in as opposed to towing it out. I didn't know it was my sister's car. I wasn't around. Now I'm trying to get it to a repair shop, but the towing is so poor that it's very difficult to even drive the car forward.
Okay, well, let me address what you're talking about. First of all, everything you said is bad. Everything. The car has to be sitting in exactly the position it's traveled on the roadway, including it needs a butt in the driver's seat. You can't align anything on a car. You can't align front to back, side to side with the tires in the air. You can't. That's not the way the car drives down the road. The tires aren't in the air. So if your alignment guy lifted it up and took his strings or his fancy measurements and he set the front end with strings and fancy measurements when the front tires weren't on the ground, you spent a hell of a lot of money for nothing. hell of a lot of money for nothing. So the car, we have alignment racks that we spend thousands of dollars having calibrated. They're perfectly level. We put the car on there, we air up the tires, we hang the heads on all four tires, we push a button, and the computer goes, no, Mark, that right front tire's 12 pounds less than the rest of them. Oh, how did you know that? And so you air it up. But we have to have, Mark, and then we have to have a butt in the seat. We got to have a butt in the seat. So
I think iHeart may be having a problem today.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually it's probably more on my end than anybody else's. But if the tire, if the car doesn't have a driver in it, because that we need that weight, and if the car isn't sitting on an alignment rack with pivot plates, and if we're not using electronic equipment that doesn't use strings, which is what we've used in the 50s and the 60s, then on a 1 to 10 scale, the quality of your alignment was a 2 or a 3.
Right, and there's the only way to actually correct it then is to take it into a shop then. There's no way that you can do anything to even get it where it's roadable to drive it to the shop.
It's that kind of traveling carny guy is the worst of our industry, and I hope none of us are judged by that guy who pretends like he's going to take care of you and takes your money, and then your first trip down to the store, the smoke is billowing off your front tires because the toe in is 2 inches instead of 2/1000ths of an inch. So, you know, what part of town do you live in?
Unfortunately, I live in another state.
Okay. This is what I would do. I would call the closest Napa store, auto parts store. I would even stop by the closest Napa store and find the oldest gray-haired guy there. Then walk over to him and say, I just moved into this area and I'm looking for the best alignment guy around. And that grizzly son of a gun at the Napa store will know who the grizzly son of a gun is that's the best alignment guy in the neighborhood. That's how I would find him. Because they sell him parts, and here's one. He doesn't return them. So he doesn't buy two tie rod ends and then return one. He buys one and he uses it and he doesn't return it. The parts guys know that, and I use Napa as an example. If you find a gray-haired grizzly guy that's worked at the rest of the auto parts store that's been there a long time, then he's the guy as well. But that's how you find a good shopper. You can just get on the internet and look at their reviews. Anyway, I got to run, but thank you very much. We'll be back right after this. Well, if you want to call the show, this is your last chance right now. 602-508-0960 if you'd like to call us. 602-508-0960 if you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area. Then you can use our 888-960-9696. So guess what our call letters are in Phoenix? 960 the Patriot. So 602-508-0960, and actually that works no matter where you're at. And Gil's going to answer the phone, and then he whispers into my ear, and I have two headphones on. One is Gil and one is programming. And he says, line two is John, or he'll just say John or whatever, and then I'll call you up. That's how it works. And so we've got 16 minutes left of the show, so you're welcome to give us a call. Folks, there's a big difference between you taking your car to a shop like mine, which is very normal. I'm not better or worse than anybody else, because if we burn your car down, we have insurance that covers it. We have technicians that are going to be here tomorrow, and we're going to be here tomorrow. When you bring somebody over to align your car at your house, that is absolutely one of the worst decisions you can make. There is no way I could align your car even close to what it needs to be without having all the equipment. The shop has thousands of dollars worth of equipment, and then setup and verification and programming. We all have those costs associated with it, and we can put your front tires and your back tires on a gnat's wing. We can do anything. We talk a thousandth of an inch, and a hair is 3 to 8 thousandths of an inch thick. We're talking about the third of a human hair. We can align your car. Now, when you align the car, here's what we have to do. You know that most roads are crowned to the right, so water runs off the roadway to the right. So the road, the center of the road is a little higher than the edge of the road. What we have to do is, those of us that have gray hair and have been trained and well-trained about alignments, we say to you, do you drive mostly highway or city? Because highway, we are far more flat, and the cities, they curve to the right where they run the water off into the curbs, into the gutters of the street. So if you say, I'm on the highway, then I'm going to just line that thing straight down the road. So you go straight down the road. But if you're around the city most of the time, I'm going to dial a little bit of left drift to keep you straight, because you're on a roadway that's sloped to the right. The car's going to want to just gently go right, but I'm going to just add 1 or 2 degrees here to make it hug the road. Now, when you get up on the highway, you won't notice the difference. It's not going to make you pull hard left or anything like that. But it's, you know, it's, I don't know if that guy was really good in alignments and he could align it with a piece of string and it could be verified that he was a wizard and he could do stuff that nobody else could do, he'd be working for me for $100,000 a year. He's not. And then, of course, certifications mean everything. The idea that you're certified ASE, Automotive Service Excellence, you can be certified in front ends. You can be certified in tune-ups and drivability, vehicle emissions, air conditioning, transmissions, differentials. You can be certified. If you're a master technician, you've passed all 8 automotive tests. So you've become a master technician. That's kind of what you're looking for. That's us old gray-haired guys. And there's a lot of young bucks out there that are master technicians because they just get it. And they came out of some school, and then they went and took their ASE certs, and they didn't do 5 and 7 as well as they should have of the 8 tests that they need to pass. So they go back and study, and then when they get 5 and 7, boom, they're masters. And at that point, they command a lot more money, too. So the idea is the technician is paid out of our labor rate. And, of course, labor rates have gone up dramatically because technicians are moving around a lot. And as a result of that, we've gone from a shop labor fee. Everybody in town around me in Phoenix has gone up $10, $15, and some $20 an hour just because we're hiring technicians that want more money, and the techs are moving around a lot. And the reason they're moving around a lot is some shops are really busy and some shops are really slow. And the really slow guys want to go to the busy shops. And that's kind of how it goes, and I'm pretty sure it's that way everywhere. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
Hey, good morning to Dick.
Dick, good morning.
Hi, how are you, sir?
I'm good.
Hey, Mark, I have a 2003 Lincoln Town Car, 126,000 miles on it. It runs good. A gas mileage sucks. Now, I remember in a previous caller, you asked him if he had black smoke. I don't have that. But you said if it smells like rotten eggs, yes, and this will start to come up. So what do you think?
Well, if it smells like rotten eggs, we are overcoming the catalytic converter with too much fuel, and we need to go underneath the hood and figure out what it is that's causing the problem. Now, this is on a 1 to 10 scale. This is a 5 or 6. It's just no real big deal. We're going to find out what is it that's causing this computer to think that we're climbing a hill when we're not climbing a hill, because obviously we need to give it more gas to climb a hill. The fact that it smells like rotten eggs, the fact that you have an accompanying symptom of poor fuel economy or significantly different fuel economy, this is a piece of cake for us old guys. You put a probe in the tailpipe and you look at the CO reading and it's 6%. So then you go into the computer, you plug your scanner in that costs $45,000. You plug it in and you start looking around at some of the parameters and you look at the O2 sensor, and the O2 sensor is saying 1, 1, 1. Well, 1 means give me gas and 5 means shut the damn gas off. Okay? It's yelling 1, 1, 1. And you look and you go, why are you yelling 1? You should be yelling 3. Oh, look here. The hose is bad that goes to the map sensor. Oh, cut this, pull a little piece of hose out. Oh, now you're at 3. Okay, now we're at $75 to find it and $12 to fix it.
Okay, where are you located?
Where are you located?
I'm in Cave Creek.
Okay, I'd go to Blackwell, 40th and Greenway. 40th and Greenway. Okay, now you're in Cave Creek. Are you how far off of I-17 are you?
Let me see. I-17, quite a ways. I'd have to take Lone Mountain all the way down.
Okay, well, Blackwell handles that northeast quadrant of the valley for me. And so either your Cave Creek area falls, but if you were closer to I-17, I would have sent you to Action Auto at Deer Valley and I-17. He's good, too. But Blackwell's at Deer Valley and I-17. Blackwell's at 40th Street and Greenway. So there's, you know, there's quite a few miles between the two of them. Kurtz Automotive is at I-17 and Bell. All of those guys will have no problem with this question. Why does my car stink like rotten eggs? We'll tell you.
Right. Okay. Sounds good.
And Mark, to answer your question, I'm gonna pay you a compliment. I understand you were paying me a compliment by asking where I was at. But this radio show it's not about me thumping my chest and telling everybody I'm the best car repair shop in town. So since 1988, I've avoided where the hell I live and where I work because it's just easier. And I think I'm more credible that way. But I'm going to tell you and don't tell anybody else. I'm so far away from you. I'm in the southern portion of the entire valley down on Warner and I-10. So that's the reason why I wanted. I didn't want you to drive that far because you're going to pass a lot of shops, good shops, to drive that far. So I put your needs in front of my own.
Okay, thank you so much, Mark. I appreciate it.
You betcha. And that's the way it is because there's too many guys in this industry, in the radio and the media business, that thump their chests and they want you to go to their shop because they're the only ones in the world that can do it. I've done better than that. I learned really quick that I can't possibly handle all the people that want to listen to the radio show and perhaps believe that I can wave my magic wand and fix their car for $5. So that's why I created the best car repair shops. These guys are my friends. They're really, really good at what they do. They're just no BS. They know what to do. They know how to bill. They know how to fix cars. They know how to take care of customers. And that's the way it is. And you can find all that information at marksalem.com. MarkSalem.com. You can click on Best Car Repair Shops and you're home free. Oh, we have one more caller. Who's that?
Say hello to James.
James, good morning.
Morning. How are you, Mark?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Good. So my question is, it seems a little impossible to what's going on, and I've got a 1979 Chevy K10 Scottsdale short bed with a 350 small block.
Okay.
And my question is, I just completely redid the cooling system, aluminum radiator, two 14-inch fans, the hoses, the thermostat, whole shebang, and it idles great. It's also fuel-injected, but when I drive, it continues to climb up past 227 degrees. It'll just go and go and go until I have to shut it off. So
I'm not worried about that.
What's going on.
I'm not worried about that. First of all, we want your car to run at 220. Okay? The reason why we want you to run it at 220 is because water boils at 212, and every time you shut it off, we get a tablespoon of water, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not worried about 220. My motorhome runs north of 220. My truck runs north of 220. We have 17 cars in our facility that belong to my family. All of us are running 190 to 220. So on your gauge, that should be slightly to the right of the halfway mark. And if that's, the red zone's the red zone. So I don't like the idea that you put cooling fans on a 79 Chevy pickup. I don't, and I'll tell you why. I had a 74 I put cooling fans on, and I fought cooling system problems all the time. I finally put a shroud and a fan clutch back on it and just said to hell with it. So it's really difficult to get those fans to work right, and you can't possibly program them to be temperature sensitive because the sensors they use are pretty substandard. So it's real difficult to do that. I think you're far better off with a really good clutch fan, and I think the howling, it'll howl until it wears out a little, just a bit, you know, it gets used. But you're so much better off with a shroud and a fan clutch, and you didn't gain anything but maybe one or two horsepower by taking the fan clutch off and putting your electric cooling fans on, and I'll bet you got them bolted to the back side of the radiator, and there's no real way to direct the air to that area, and that's important when we put electric cooling fans on it. So we have to have a shroud that funnels the air to the fan. And you probably don't have that.
Gotcha.
But I just want to set you with this. I'm not concerned of 190 to 220. I'm not. And I'll bet that the faster you go, the cooler it runs. And you're really talking about stop-and-go traffic in the city. How close am I?
Pretty close. Okay. Actually, the the faster and harder I drive is the hotter it gets.
Okay, and then if then that's the case, I need to start advancing the timing a little bit. Perhaps we've got a mechanical problem, we got a vacuum problem at the distributor, because what you're describing now is a timing problem that it's getting hotter. And under the best of conditions, you have a 195 thermostat in there. Because if we don't have a thermostat, the water runs through the radiator so fast it doesn't have time to dissipate its heat. Because the thermostat not only controls the flow of water, but it also controls the speed of water. So a thermostat's kind of important. But I got to run. If you want to continue, mark at marksalem.com. Mark at marksalem.com. God bless you.